The Fog Tree. Takahiro and Carlos were sitting in the corner of the Fog Tree coffee shop. The Fog Tree was filled with students and faculty from the nearby college. It was a good place to talk and a good place to meet new people. Maureen walked past, waved, and quietly greeted Takahiro. "Hey, Maureen, come join us." "I don't want to interrupt," she said. "It's okay, have a seat." As Maureen sat down, Takahiro made the introductions. Pointing to Maureen, he said, "Dr. Maureen Lee," and then pointing to Carlos, he said, "Dr. Carlos Malay." Then, with his own unique sense of humor, he pointed to the only empty chair and said, "And this is Dr. Nobody." Both Carlos and Maureen made it clear that they wanted to be called by their first names, as all three returned to the serious business at hand, drinking coffee and solving the world's problems. Maureen looked at Takahiro and then, speaking of Carlos, asked, "The author of Harmony in Troubled Times?" "He's the one," responded Takahiro. "I'm honored, truly honored," said Maureen. "Thanks," replied Carlos. After a great deal of talk about the book, its contents, and its deeper meanings, Maureen said to Carlos, "Your book touches so many fields of thought. What was your doctorate in?" Carlos laughed as Maureen became concerned that she might have asked an inappropriate question. "My doctorates are all honorary degrees, given to me after the book hit the bestsellers list. But I did complete a master's degree in psychology. My undergraduate work was in education. If you want the real truth, I was enrolled in a doctoral program in psychology, but was thrown out of the program."
"Really?"
asked Maureen. "And what university has a red face now?" "It's far in the past. The university is just as good now as it was before. But the story of my doctoral work is exciting. Do you want to hear about it?"
"Sure, I'd love to."
Takahiro, who had known them both for many years, had heard the story before, but he was anxious to hear it again. "My thesis was that children choose mentors before they have well-developed cognitive skills. The choice they make influences the rest of their lives. The logical conclusion would be that we should surround small children with adults who have well-developed ethics and who might be around later in life when the child needs guidance that the parents are unable to supply. Grandparents, uncles, and aunts are often the natural choices, but long-time good friends also make good candidates."
"It sounds logical to me," chipped in Maureen.
"It's actually pretty basic stuff. My research methods were a little unconventional, and though repeatable, each experiment takes a considerable amount of time and resources. For my research, I needed to randomly select some place in the world. It needed to be a place where I did not understand the language. I would go there, live with the local inhabitants, and see if I could spot people of exceptional wisdom. This needed to take place before I understood much of the language. Then I would learn the language, write down the pearls of wisdom that came from my mentor of choice, wrap it all up with a bow, and submit it as part of my thesis. My wife Helen supported the project, even knowing that I would be away from home for 6 months. Excitement started to build. While waiting for approval from my committee, I did some research into early childhood development and the acquisition of cognitive skills. Finally, my committee said I could proceed, but warned me that my methods were shaky and that I might have to start all over if I couldn't properly support my thesis. Armed with the blessing of the committee, I set out to choose my destination. I bought a big world map and mounted it on a wall in my garage. Then, with the help of my dear wife, Helen,
I blindfolded myself and prepared to choose where my research would take place. Helen spun me around several times and then walked me around the garage until I no longer understood the difference between east and west. I was dizzy and at the same time very excited. Then, with the aid of a dart, I took aim at my future. I raised my hand into throwing position and asked my wife if there was a chance of hitting the map from where I was standing. She encouraged me to turn a few degrees to the left. I turned, took a deep breath, and threw the dart towards my destination. With a loud thunk, the dart sealed my destiny. I pulled off the blindfold and walked towards the map. My wife Helen was already there, exclaiming, "Oh no, Carlos, you have to throw it again." Instinctively, she pulled the dart from the map and with a quick flip of the wrist, tossed the dart away from us as if it were poison that might infect the family. "Please, Carlos, try again," she cried. Driven by male stubbornness, I walked towards the map with determination. I had seen that the dart had landed somewhere near the northeastern corner of Africa. A quick scan revealed a hole in the top triangle of the first A in Al-Khalil. Maureen put down her cup and made a swishing noise from between her teeth and then asked, "In Hebron?" "Yes, in Hebron, in the West Bank." "Did you know that Al-Khalil is one of the oldest continuously inhabited towns in the world? People have been living there for at least 5,000 years. It's full of history." "And full of trouble," Takahiro added. "Some call it the fault line of the world." Carlos continued his story. After a full 2 weeks of discussion with my anxious wife, it was settled. I'd go to Al-Khalil. The next 2 weeks were filled with research and preparations. I decided that I needed some outer justification for being there, besides the fact that I was searching for a person who radiated true wisdom. Selling shirts from Hawaii seemed to be something that might work, so I bought about 50 flowered shirts and 100 t-shirts, all to be sold in the market in Hebron. A month later, I landed in Tel Aviv with 2 suitcases and 2 duffel bags full of shirts. I caught a series of buses and was welcomed to Hebron by the sound of gunfire. I stayed in a small hotel for a few days, but spent most of my time at the local university trying to get some help for the project. The faculty suggested the village of Halhul, 5 kilometers north of Hebron. Given the jet lag, the heat, and the memory of the sound of gunfire, a small village was very appealing. With a translator, a few t-shirts, and some cash, I finally located a farmer who agreed to rent me a small cottage. I said goodbye to my translator, and a few days later, I was all settled in. A week later, the changes in my diet gave me alternate types of digestive problems. There were times when I was so drained that I thought about going home. After the 4th week, I ventured out and took the bus back to Hebron. I took my Hawaiian shirts and headed for the main outdoor market. With great difficulty, I finally got through the formalities of finding a place where I could sell my goods. For the next few weeks, I displayed my wares on a cardboard box and watched the people come and go. The sounds would vary from musical and familiar to odd and annoying. I made notes in my journal almost continuously. Not knowing the language, I had to describe people by what they were wearing or what they were selling. In the meantime, each day on my way home, I passed a number of small farms. The owner of one such farm was a man who I guessed was in his 70s. He had few remaining teeth and only a few wisps of pure white hair, but his face shone like the sun. I had such a strong attraction to him that I decided he would be my choice as a mentor. So, without the aid of language, I had found someone I felt I could trust. The next step was to develop enough language so that I could converse with him and confirm or deny my theories. I spent more time in the market and became a more vocal seller of shirts. As business picked up, I began to notice the visual effects in Hebron, especially with the youth. The Hawaiian shirts were everywhere. After 3 months, I felt ready to speak to my mentor. One fine Tuesday, I left the house at dawn, walked to the neighboring farm, and greeted the elderly man. His name was Lutfi. I explained that though I was selling shirts in Hebron, my real purpose was to research my thesis. Lutfi was extremely kind, living up to the meaning of his name. I presented him with the only remaining Hawaiian shirt and ask if we could spend more time together. He agreed. After that, we met every evening. We became more like father and son than researcher and subject. At this point, Takahiro brought more coffee for the three of them. It was getting late, and the coffee shop would close soon. Maureen then asked, "Was Lutfi everything you expected?" "Everything and more," responded Carlos. "I don't recall ever meeting a person with such qualities before. He seemed to be full of nothing but love." One day I asked him about the nature of wisdom and why some older people had so much, while others seemed so full of bitterness. His answer is worthy of thought. A young man with a white apron came and, while cleaning the neighboring tables, said softly, "We're closing in 10 minutes." Takahiro nodded and said, "Thanks." Carlos continued. Lutfi explained that each human heart is like a school. At some point in life, you become open to the universe and what it has to teach you. You become an active observer instead of just seeing what you already believe in. When this happens, wisdom starts to grow. For some, the beginning of this process takes 10 or 20 years. For others, it takes much longer, like a slowly germinating seed. Others only start the process of watching when they are on their deathbed. In life, the more observing you do, the more wisdom you'll have. Those months in Hebron were truly the most exciting months of my life. Never before and never since has anything so profoundly influenced me. "So Lutfi became your mentor?" asked Maureen. "Yes, he really did." "And the thesis?" "Too unscientific, too spiritual, not enough science." "It's okay, I understand it now. They had their job to do, and I had mine." "I thought the jobs were the same, but they were not." The young man in the white apron walked to the table and said apologetically, "Sorry, folks, time to go." The three friends nodded their heads in acceptance and abandoned the remaining coffee and walked towards the front door. They stepped into the night and turned towards the university. After walking a few blocks, Maureen said, "This is where I turn." They all exchanged loving goodbyes, knowing that they had shared something far deeper than ordinary coffee house talk. Carlos and Takahiro continued towards the university until Takahiro came to his house. The two old friends parted ways as Carlos headed for his guest house on the campus. Tomorrow would be another day full of lectures, of meeting old friends and making new ones. Tonight, all three friends had drunk too much coffee and stayed out far too late. But none regretted it. In time, sleep finally came to them all, bestowing dreams of Arab youths with Hawaiian t-shirts and of the Lutfi in us all.